Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Listening to the best of the Browns.
Ball game over! Browns win! Browns win!
A weekly mix of 92.3 The Fan's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Audio courtesy of our show. Hello. I was surprised. I woke up this morning. My alarm goes off at 3:10. And I looked at my phone, and the first thing on my For You was your tweet yesterday during the show about what Rodney McLeod had said, that Jimmy Haslam sits in the exit interviews. And we just played that audio of Rodney talking about Jimmy Haslam sitting in the exit interviews. And I was really surprised at the reaction that you had had from our listeners, from the people who follow you on social media. Very upset and taking that as a very bad thing about the Cleveland Browns. By the way, Cavs coming up at 7. I promise you that. Plus in about last night. Because tonight is a bigger game than maybe some of us realize for one Cavalier in particular. We'll tell you who coming up at 7 a.m. However, when Rodney was here, like, I took that yesterday. I was like, okay, we could talk about that tomorrow because we had the whole hour with Rodney and, you know, we kind of wanted to conduct our own exit interview. And then I saw the reaction go, whoa, my goodness gracious. A lot of people took that negatively tone.
They did. They said it was hearkening back to the old Haslam ways of meddling and putting
his... Is that
his,
meddlesome?
Putting his... Well, that's what we're going to get into because I was a little surprised too, and I think nobody would have cared if you would have heard, let's say we would have had Rodney McLeod a year ago and he had the exact same story. Yeah, we did exit interviews. I talked to Haz for 20 minutes.
Do you find that funny that he had a nickname?
Endearing, right?
That shows you that, well, he knows his veterans if he has a nickname.
Yeah.
Okay? Like, Al Davis was Mr. Davis. That's what he is. Mm. Jimmy Haslam being called Has by his veterans. I'm like, okay, he has a good rapport with his veterans. I don't know if Isaiah McGuire walked in and called him Has as a fourth-round rookie in his first year coming in last year, but a guy like Rodney McLeod, 13 years in, yeah, over time, there is a nickname.
Now, I'm not sure if Rodney, if he told us this on the air or if it was some chit-chat off the air between breaks, but he did tell us that, you know, same thing happened in Indianapolis, but it wasn't with Ursay. It was with Ursay's daughter.
No, he said that on air.
Oh, he did say it on
air.
He
did say it on air, yeah.
So he kind of made it sound like it's not that atypical, but obviously people will hear Ursay and they're going to think the worst, too. They're going to think meddler. Even if it wasn't Ursay, then they'll think his daughter's meddling.
Said it happened in Philly, too, and Philly's been a pretty good organization over the last decade.
Yeah, so this was a weird one to cherry pick. Like, you just cherry pick the results. Just look at the results. Like, just look at the scoreboard if you're mad. But like I said, nobody would have cared a year ago if Haslam would have sat in on exit meetings when they went to the playoffs and they had a magical run down the stretch, right?
No, they wouldn't have cared. They probably would have liked it and said, see, he's in tune with his players. All this takes a different turn if the 14-3. Whew. That's a lot of losses. 14-3 instead of 3-14. Like last year, we didn't hear. I mean, there were people calling in last year thanking Jimmy Haslam. We had the calls thanking him and being in tune with his players and things like that. It whether or not we like an owner just basically turns into what you think of the scoreboard. Owen knows this as a Chiefs fan. Asked Chiefs fans what they thought of Clark Hunt before they got Andy Reid, and then they got Alex Smith, and then they got Patrick Mahomes. There was definitely a different thought with that ownership group at that time. It all comes down to whether or not you're winning. And in a lot of ways, it should. It should. Because that's how you're measured in sports, is by what you do as far as winning is concerned. I don't think that this is a bad thing in one way. It can be seen as it can be seen as meddlesome. However, you're 3-14. I'm not going to get the temperature of any of my veterans. I mean, Myles Garrett openly talked about on that Friday, well, I might consider playing somewhere else. I would hope that Jimmy Haslam might go ahead and have a conversation with Myles Garrett, considering everybody's long history with one another here. I would hope that my owner goes and, let's talk here for a moment here. Like, well, I would hope the owner steps in. Like, so we're being, I can't defend a guy who's 3-14 and has a slew of bad contracts, as Zach mentioned yesterday afternoon on Afternoon Drive, and has a huge bad contract that, again, we're celebrating possible insurance outs because of that contract to get us out of that contract a little bit sooner than what some of us thought. I mean, this is not a good situation. That's not a defense.
Well, if it's not Jimmy, then it's just the other guys you don't like right now. It's Andrew Berry.
Kevin
Stefanski.
But they don't like the owner for keeping those guys in employed, yeah. Which I have a different theory about
that. What percentage?
Well, I have an alternate theory about that.
What percentage of the fan base right now do you think would have just preferred a house cleaning? New coach, new GM.
85%.
You think it's that high?
Yeah,
see, I don't think it's that high.
I do.
I still think there are a lot of fans who they think that we were very unlucky last year. They think there were a bunch of injuries again, that they think we've been riddled with that. And they also think that stability is something that we should champion, as opposed to the old days when it was every other year we were looking for either a head coach, either a GM, or both.
I think that's 15%. And my theory I kind of pass around is, maybe I want to share this here in a second, but I'll share it now. I know I want to play Nick's reaction. I want to play what Zach said about it, because Nick seemed to have a negative reaction to it. Zach had a more of a measured positive reaction to it, and I want to see where everybody else is on it. And do you think Jimmy Haslam sitting in on exit interviews is a bad thing? 216-474-0092. I didn't think it was a bad thing. But I got to know, do you believe there's a path, a realistic path, other than it's the NFL, that the Browns go back to the playoffs in 2025? Off the top of your head, you believe that there's a realistic path?
Yeah.
You do believe there's a realistic path, but other than it's the NFL?
No, that was my path.
Okay,
32 teams
so
can believe that.
That's not
league.
A realistic path. That's a hope. That's not a path.
Yeah, but I don't think it's... If you told me next year they made the playoffs, I wouldn't be gobsmacked.
No, you would.
Like, yeah, that's how the league works.
You wouldn't be
normally
over.
It's six teams every year that aren't in the playoffs go to
True.
The playoffs the next year. We just saw Washington go to the playoffs. It's like Houston a year before.
But you would say it's unlikely. Like, it was unlikely for Washington to take Jaden Daniels and go right to the playoffs. That's an unlikely thing.
Yeah, it's hard. I'm not trying to get you on the finer print.
It's
just
fine.
Seven teams make the playoffs. It's relatively easy these days to make the playoffs.
Okay, but I mean, we just assume that most teams that make the playoffs are decent franchises that aren't going to fire everybody and things like that. I can't imagine that Jimmy Haslam saying, this thing can absolutely be fixed this coming. I mean, we just talked about the quarterback's contract, the albatross. He could be thinking, and this is part of this, guys, is everybody in the NFL is telling him, I mean, again, watch the Browns broadcast. Go back on NFL Plus and watch the Browns broadcast. Those color analysts, to a man, stand there and talk about how great Kevin Stefanski is while they're getting throttled. While they're getting throttled. We have Albert Breer, who comes in, who knows everybody. We've had other insiders who come on in, and they know everybody, and they say, Andrew Berry, if you let him go right now, it would be a major mistake. He would be hired in moments by another football team. Jimmy Haslam's hearing the same thing. Remember, this is a guy who listened to Joe Banner once, and he hired Rob Chudzinski, fired him after a year because they were going to go on some whim that they were going to hire Jim Harbaugh, who would leave football before he'd play for the Cleveland Browns, or before he'd coach for the Cleveland Browns. He listened to him at one point, and Jimmy knows that he was ridiculed at that point. He's looking at the Raiders being made fun of right now for firing Antonio Pierce after 1 year. He sees the Patriots being made fun of right now and looking like a listless franchise and what's going on with the Jets. And he's thinking, well, there's got to be at least some stability in this. And there's also one other thought to it. Zach came on yesterday afternoon, Jackson, and you can go back and listen to that interview, 92.3thefan.com, and he says you have a bunch of bad contracts. And, of course, you have the Deshaun Watson contract, right? it's more unlikely than it is likely that you will not make the playoffs in 2025. It's more likely you won't make the playoffs. If he knows that, wouldn't he go, why make a change now when I have these bad contracts still? I have this quarterback still. We're not through the woods yet. We could find out that he's going to be... He had a setback, but he's going to be fine, and he's going to start the season. Like, we could always find that out. I know Mary Kay said if he has surgery again, he's definitely not going to pretty much play in 2025, but you get what I'm saying. I don't know that yet. So he's thinking, wouldn't this be a much more attractive position getting ready for 2026 to a new general manager and to a new head coach? I brought this up before.
It's
like
really
with college football,
dangerous, though, with the second pick in the draft.
I understand that.
Really dangerous.
I totally get that. But you could, and if you were, like, there's people who do not want a quarterback. Okay, well, if you think your owner's meddlesome, do you want him to stand by and let them draft a quarterback that you don't want? You want that to happen? Like, we pick and choose when we want our owners to step in.
Yeah, I just think if you're even thinking about making a change, you have to just make the change because of what's at stake. But, I saw one of the draft sites said the Browns have the greatest value of draft capital of anybody
yes,
else in the NFL.
Yes,
you're
yes.
going to give that to somebody.
Joe Shad
that you're
pointed
even,
that out.
You're even if you're mulling it over, you got to just make the change.
But I understand that. But this is a man who's had to learn the hard way over the last decade that leadership does matter, front office and head coach, by what I just gave you, the examples I just gave you. So it's almost a college football where it's like, hey, we got a tough schedule coming up next year. We still have a big buyout on this guy. Arkansas thought this way, and then they ended up winning some football games. Let's let Sam Pittman take the losses, and then we'll find someone else. It's a big buyout. We can wait. Let's let somebody else take the losses, and then we'll find somebody else. Like, that might be how he's thinking here. Because this is not, if you were to open up this job right now, how attractive is this job with the five other jobs, or six other jobs that would be open right now? How attractive are the Browns in comparison to even the Bears? The Bears have a rookie quarterback that did, I know that people are down on him, but I thought he played decently well with the situation that was handed to him. His numbers aren't terrible. His numbers are not terrible. The Jets are a bad, bad, bad situation. Okay, great. We're down in the gutter with the Jets. I mean, this is not a good spot compared
to
the
Jets. The Browns and the Jets do have some premier players. So maybe you hang your hat on that.
Maybe you do. But again, we're kind of down there in the mud, and this is not a really good spot right now. Next year, okay, we would probably not finish very good. We'd have a higher draft pick. We would have maybe some more capital.
Oh, no, though. Would that draft capital that you talked about, would that make this a very, very interesting job for a candidate?
Yeah. For a general manager and a head coach? Yeah. Yeah. This guy gave Kevin Stefanski, because you'd come in and go, he gave Kevin Stefanski 6 years. Stefanski did a good job. By next year, if things don't work out, we're not going to hear Troy Aikman get on national television and say all these great things about Kevin Stefanski. It ain't going to go that way next year. It ain't going to happen. So it's either A, Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, get the nose up on this thing, and maybe they take a rookie quarterback, or maybe they bring in a veteran, and that veteran takes them to close to 500 or gets them back in the playoffs. That'd be great. I would love it. I pray for it. But if they don't, this is a more attractive position in 2026 than it is in 2025. This is more attractive for anybody out there who you would want to bring in that would be quality. That would be somebody that you would say, let me give you another at least, I want to shoot for a decade with you. Like they've shot for a decade with Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski. And for the better part, now we're going to go over half a decade with both of them. 6 years, that's not a bad run in the NFL. It's not a bad run. So maybe he's thinking that way.
Let's see. The Browns came out. They lost. There's a lot we got to recap.
Wow.
They lost to Baltimore in what was an impressive bit of non-competitive football.
Yeah, I forgot they even played at this point.
Yes. I was. We were getting ready for Nathan's interview. Nathan Zagur going to come up at 3 o'clock as he does every single Monday. And I was like, we played.
I tried to Men in Black erase that game from my memory.
Can we just do that with a season?
I would like to. I would like to, if that's a possibility. Between Bailey Zappi, though, and, oh man, how quick was that where Zappi just showed us that there was no point of even arguing between him and DTR?
Yeah, no, they're both equally awful.
They're both equally awful.
Yeah. Yeah, I really would at some
point.
We
knew it, but to see it.
At some point, we'll have to dig deeper into Zappi versus DTR, because it's a real conversation now.
But which one can sell us insurance better?
Yeah, yeah, because they
maybe
will.
Maybe this time next year?
I think, listen.
As I check for a watch I don't have?
A nice future in insurance goes a long way. Great 401ks, stable line of work. Everybody always needs insurance. And I guess it's kind of like a Browns quarterback. You get paid no matter what. Oh. No matter the disaster, you get paid.
Yeah, I guess so.
Kind of brought that around, put a nice little bow on it.
Yeah, so we started with a game that none of us remember. And then we go to
Stefanski and locker cleanout yesterday, where he really wanted you to know how much, hey, we want to get this righted. We want to do this. And then we had Andrew Berry's 40-minute press conference today, which is kind of where we can start, because I kind of had gotten to the point where I'm like, we talked jokingly on Friday, what's the Friday news dump? And they didn't. This would have been a perfect Friday news dump. They didn't. They instead let off with the news, and we'll play the news in a bit here, but the fact that Deshaun Watson has had a setback in his recovery from Achilles, which has only been going on for like 2 months, 2.5 months, and that will impact his timetable to return somehow.
Are you suggesting the timing is interesting on that one?
I sure think it is.
Yeah, okay.
If I were a cynical man, which this season has made me far more cynical than I care to be when it comes to my favorite football team, I would sure sound like, oh, that's very convenient. The guy that you can't cut coming off an Achilles, now it's going to be longer before he comes back from his Achilles. And you just found about it in the last, it sounds like they told him as he was walking into the press conference.
The guy that over the weekend was posting TikToks of him and his wife dancing on the side of a road for some reason. Yeah. I still have not figured out why they're dancing on the side of the road. So maybe someone can help me out with that. That seems like a pretty stupid thing to do in general, but it looked pretty good. It looked all right.
I mean, in the vast pantheon of dumb things Deshaun has done, on or off the field, this is kind of middle of the road. Sorry to pardon the turn of phrase. Yeah. But no, yeah, I mean, you know what? You dance under the side of the road, King. All right, you're not hurting anyone right there.
Well, and so I listened to it, and you tell me if you thought the same thing that I thought. And like, obviously, Deshaun is not going to be a factor for a large portion of next year, if no part of next year. But I do think it's interesting that maybe Deshaun is willing to play ball. Like maybe he sees the fact that Stefanski and Barry are potentially losing their jobs, and it's all because they rolled the dice with Deshaun Watson. Maybe Deshaun is like, all right, I know I stink. I know I'm not good. We can come up with injury after injury to never make me see the field again. And meanwhile, you can get some of that insurance money and get some of the money back to go ahead and try to make some different moves.
So you think the guy who we heard for 3 years take no accountability for his actions, you think that guy's suddenly feeling a little peckish?
I wonder if he realizes he's. I know you don't believe it, but if he's costing people their jobs, the people that bet on him. Listen, he doesn't want to be out there anyway. Why does Deshaun want to be out there?
That's fair.
This saves him from ever having to play football again because he stinks at it and he knows it. While in the meanwhile, he gets to cash every check that he was always going to cash anyway, and it does help out the Browns. He's not helping out fans, by the way. That would just be something that happens. He'd be helping out the people that rolled the dice on him, and he failed.
I just like the idea that, again, for 3 years, hey, Deshaun, have you learned anything? No, because I didn't do anything wrong. And then this time he's like, I got to come through for Kevin.
No, but that was with allegations. That was different because that would be put at the feet of him. You see how that works?
Uh-huh.
And this is a completely different scenario. This would be in the idea of you guys roll the dice on me. So I don't want to cost you your job that way. Let's do it somewhere else.
I love this theory. You know, I'm a man who likes theories.
You don't sound like you love the theory.
No, I think it's the most
ridiculous. You sound like you're really dismissive of the theory.
But I like it. I like it. So is he in the training room and he's like, hey, AB, wink, wink, my Achilles isn't doing so hot.
I think it's like, hey, listen, things aren't feeling great in the moment. You know how easy it would be to find an injury on anybody, that especially people that played football? You know how easy it is to find an injury if you want to find an injury? Like, if Deshaun doesn't ever want to play football again, this is how you go about doing it.
So let me be very clear here. The only part of this that I think might be far-fetched is the idea that it's Deshaun's doing. I will say, if I were a cynical man, and I am, it sure seems like this is the perfect news for the Browns to have that ensures fans that Deshaun Watson is very unlikely to ever step on the field again after 6 weeks of them saying Deshaun's going to be in a quarterback kerfuffle going forward and fans screaming at the top of their lungs that they don't want that. It just, the convenience of this setback is very interesting for me.
I mean, we got to find out more about the insurance money and everything attached to it, because it seems like they're going to recoup some money from last year moving forward to this year with the amount of time that he missed. And then if he misses a whole season, if my understanding of it is correct, that could be worth almost $45 million for the Browns next year moving forward to really get him out of this mess.
Is it bad that I don't give a damn if it's a made-up thing or not? Whether how real it is or when they found out or how long they've been sitting on this information, I don't care. Because the brass tacks is... I don't, because it's twofold. One, I don't have to see them struggle to try and do anything with Deshaun again. They failed. As bad as they failed for trading for the guy, they failed at building around the guy just as bad as Deshaun failed on the field. So on one hand, I don't have to watch somebody struggle with like scissors and in danger of cutting themselves again. So that's one hand. The other is, I just don't have to see that guy on the field again. And what it means for just simple conversation with other Browns fans. Like, the big winner today was Brown's Twitter. Hey, you guys don't have to argue over Deshaun ever again.
Or, yeah, if he's in any actual competition for anything, because he won't be.
Because he's not going to be in competition for anything. It would be surprising now with the way that they, you know, they've left a lot of ambiguity, too, which was the other perfect thing of, well, I only know this, but I don't know anything else about this. I only know that Deshaun's had a setback. Nobody really knows what that means. Oh, very convenient, the lack of details here. But... I mean, the fact that the Browns Twitter is a big winner because we're probably never going to have to argue about Deshaun other than us all looking at some point and going, that thing sucked, right?
Yeah, yep. I mean, it's not the nail in the coffin of the Deshaun Watson experience. That's not what this is. At least it didn't feel that way to me. But it's a good step forward to having like an actual quarterback competition where we don't even have to throw his name in the mix.
Yeah, I mean, that's like honestly just getting separation. Like, I think part of removing the toxicity from your fan base, it's not even about Deshaun anymore. It's about every single thing that has come with the Deshaun experience. And you cannot, and here's the thing, it's not even about the fans, it's about the players. You can't sell those guys that him coming back is some sort of a win for them. I mean, Joe Batonio gave, and we'll play it at some point in the show, he gave like the nicest way to, where he's like, hey, if Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski and the coaching staff, the OC, whoever that, if they feel like that's the right, we'll rally around it. I don't think anybody believed Joel. I think everybody kind of realizes the locker room's done with Deshaun as much as fans are done with Deshaun. So however it happens, of Deshaun being in the background, however it happens, good riddance.
Yeah, I don't think this is... Well, the interesting part about the injury side of this with Deshaun is that this doesn't mean that they're doing this and pushing Deshaun to the back burner because they felt like they were forced by Myles Garrett, for instance, to go ahead and do something like that.
Yeah.
Like, it takes the onus off of that part of the conversation, which, if I'm being fair about it, I would have loved if there was no injury for them to come out and just say he's not playing, it's not going to be a competition, and we were wrong here.
But because of the injury, accountability.
Yeah, because of the injury.
Total.
Well, that's part of it, though. Because of this injury now, they don't really have to take that accountability, and they don't have to really present it that way.
Yeah, that's probably the only reason I don't like it. But again, here's the thing. We'll talk accountability later in the show because I have some strong theories and strong opinions on what we heard today and yesterday. And I'm curious to see whether you guys felt like you got your, I don't want to say pound of flesh, but whether you got your accountability from the Browns organization. But I'm not going to quibble. I'm just going to fall back on this. It is a good thing. I know it's not a good thing for Deshaun if this is a real legitimate thing and this is the end of his career. I'm sorry, I can feel empathy for somebody who loses that or whose journey to get back where they want to be just got elongated. But for us, the idea that now it's going to be he's in the back of the mind and he will only come to the forefront if, one, he's healthy enough to play at any point next year, or which I would be shocked if it happened, or when you have to release him. That's right where I want the Browns to be with Deshaun after the last 3 years.
Yeah, and whether it was an injury or whether it was them just coming to their own conclusion. Like, I listened to Andrew Berry and I listened to Stefanski yesterday, and I left a little hopeful, Nick. I don't know if you felt the same way or not, but I did. Coming off a 3-win season, you should not feel any hope at all. But it kind of reminded me, and just listening to them talk, and I thought Andrew Berry was very honest today in many, many respects. It just kind of reminded me that they're not as dumb as what some of their actions in the previous year and change have kind of led me to believe that they have been. I mean, I get it. Ivy League degree, everything attached to it. I know they're not dumb people, but they made some dumb football moves in the name of Deshaun Watson, going back to Stefanski and his highlighted strengths, going back to some of the conversations that we've had previously. It seems like the past 24 hours, they're trying to do that, and that seems smart to me.
Let me connect a couple of dots for you here.
Okay, go ahead.
Browns need an offensive coordinator. Is there a guy on the staff who could be considered a candidate to be the offensive coordinator? Probably several. I know Mary Kay Cabot wrote an article listing several in-house candidates. Personally, I think there's only one. And that's a guy who interviewed for the North Carolina head coaching job and was the fallback option if Bill Belichick wasn't going to take that gig. It's a guy who Mike Vrabel supposedly really likes and might have an interest in hiring if Mike gets a head coaching job. I say if because you never know.
Is there a Canton connection anywhere in here?
A Canton?
I don't know. Keep going. Yes.
Tommy Rees is the tight end coach.
Oh, you're talking about current. I'm sorry.
Passing game coordinator.
I thought you were talking about somebody else. Sorry.
He's a young guy, late 30s, was offensive coordinator at Notre Dame for a couple of years, and then last year, offensive coordinator at Alabama, played for coached for Nick Saban. Nick Saban thinks he's a star on the coaching horizon, and he happened to coach Jalen Milroe, guy who some folks have listed in a mock draft coming to the Cleveland Browns as a quarterback this year. I just throw that out there.
Hmm.
That all right?
Yeah, I thought you were talking Josh McDaniels somewhere in there.
No, not in the least.
Hmm.
No.
Well,
if there's an internal candidate who's going to get that OC job, my money would be on Tommy Rees. In fact, I would put even money that Tommy Rees gets that gig.
I don't know.
You know why?
Why?
Because Kevin Stefanski needs to get it right. He's had a year.
So you're saying that Kevin will essentially be the offensive coordinator then?
He's had a year. Well, I don't know.
You're saying he's got to get it right, you're not going to bring in someone that could.
Maybe he's been so impressed by this guy.
I love when you do this.
Maybe he's been so impressed by this guy that he thinks, this is the guy. He's my Ben Johnson. This is him.
I hope you're right, Jeff. I hope you're right.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know who the offensive coordinator is.
Kevin Stefanski.
You're bringing in someone from the outside, so you got another scapegoat for next year, my friend.
Oh, there will be no next year for Kevin Stefanski. If he has to fire the offensive coordinator at the end of next year, Kevin won't be the guy firing the offensive coordinator.
I don't know, man. You say this, but yet all these guys are back. They won 3 games last year,
but
Jeff.
They won 11 last year and earned contract extensions.
What gives you the confidence to think that they're going to make any changes moving forward?
I'm not saying I have any confidence. Don't put words in my mouth, Andy Baskin.
I am putting words in your mouth.
Don't put words in my
mouth.
What
I'm saying to you is you say it with such surety, I'm telling you this is...
If they only have three wins again
next year, they're not back.
Well, of course they're not.
I don't believe it. I don't believe any of it anymore.
If they go 3-14 next year, do they even see the bye week? That's right.
I wanted the dramatic pause just for fun. Just to see if Andy would start yelling again.
Guys... They brought everybody back
because
from a three-win season. Every other team in the NFL would have fired their head coach and their general manager.
No, they didn't.
So what makes you think?
No, they didn't. Tennessee has the number one pick. They won 3 games.
And
First year head coach.
Yeah, yes.
Well, it worked real well for Gerard Mayo.
Well, you know what? Maybe
he
shouldn't have won.
And he gave him a parting gift by getting the fourth overall pick
in the
draft.
He gave us a gift. Can we send that man some cigars, please? Thank you.
Can we hire him?
I think everyone should put mayo on their sandwich today to thank him.
Let's not go that far.
You know why?
Because
Andrew Siciliano will tell you.
That's right.
It is a pox on the face of the
earth. I'm just throwing that scenario out. It's this one to me, Andy. I don't know the extent of any prior friendship, relationship, anything like that between Ken Dorsey and Kevin Stefanski. But that didn't work. And I heard the morning guys this morning talking about, and they were right on the money, I think. Should you let Kevin make his own call? Absolutely. Was Dorsey his own call? I don't know. Was he?
I don't know.
Kevin's got one more year. And you know I like Kevin. He's got to get this right. And if they don't get this... If they don't get this right... Then he's not going to be here, and Andrew Berry's not going to be here.
I'll believe things when I see them.
I will go back to the
Mark Shapiro line.
Yeah.
There is 0% and 100% chance of anything.
I would think there's an interesting scenario would be this. Kevin was so impressed by fill in the blank. I'll say Tommy Rees because I think he's the most likely guy on staff to be the OC, that he's comfortable with him, he knows him, likes him, and thinks he can be the guy. That year of working together, I think, would make someone, Kevin, more comfortable bringing in an OC, thinking, yeah, I think this is the right guy because I know what he can do, rather than bringing someone in from the outside who he is not familiar with and could move forward with. That's why I think an inside guy has the best chance. My only thought.
I trust what you say. And most of the time, Jeff, I think what you say is common sense. But this is the NFL.
This is pro sports.
And sometimes common sense just doesn't reign.
Exactly right.
And, you know, we could go through a two-win season next year. And maybe they're like, well, we're in a rebuild, and we wanted to just make sure we got another high draft pick for the current staff that's in place. I don't know. If you're the Haslams, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, right? It's like, I want continuity, so I can't get mad at them if they want to have continuity.
And I give them credit for staying the course.
Yeah, I don't. However, I do. But then the other side is, well, you only won three wins. You only had three wins. Why aren't you blowing everybody out? Like, they're in a no-win situation. I still am curious Paul DePodesta's role.
They're in a three-win situation.
No, the way, they could be in a no-win situation if it stays the course.
Did you hear the name Paul DePodesta at all this
weekend? Not once.
Did you hear it in Kevin's press conference?
No.
Did you hear it in Andrew's press conference?
Let me check. No. What is his role right now? What is his role? Is he still advising?
Paul's an incredible thought partner.
He is, man. He is an incredible thought partner.
Chuck is in Shaker. He's our thought partner. Hello, Chuck.
Hey, Chuck.
Good morning, guys. Good. All right, how's it going? Happy New Year's, too.
So. And right thank, there. Thank
yes.
You.
Yeah. Yeah, listen, I was just thinking, what would it take, guys? I don't know if a lot of people might like this move. We'd try to get Justin Fields here. You know, I know he's a runner, but, I mean, Lamar Jackson started off as a runner, but now Lamar has mastered the pass, and I'm pretty sure Justin would probably do the same thing if we got him here.
Chuck? I wouldn't rule that out. If you've listened, and I know you listen to us, and thank you for that. There are 20 guys in the NFL right now who I think are guys that are viable candidates to come in here and be part of this quarterback position group. 20, maybe more, but that doesn't mean. I mean, they've got to find the right guy who works for them. Would Fields be available? Yeah, I would think he would be. You know, unless they've seen enough of Russell Wilson. And then Russell Wilson might be available, Chuck.
Yeah, well, that's true. I was just thinking, you know, maybe we could use that number two draft pick on something different, you know, if we could bring a good quarterback in, you know.
Chuck, thank you very much. Perfect world. And I haven't done any deep digging into the quarterbacks coming out of college yet. And I will.
Can we
my gut just tells me, Andy.
Yeah.
Go sign a veteran. Go sign a young guy.
Yeah.
And bring in
sign a young guy. Yeah, draft a young guy. Is that what you're saying?
Sign a young guy.
A guy who's already in the league.
And again, none of these names are going to make anybody happy.
Nope.
Zach Wilson in Denver. Justin Fields sitting in Pittsburgh is the number two guy. Trey Lance in Dallas. Bring in one of those guys. Bring in one of those veterans who have been out there. Carson Wentz, Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, there are a lot of them out there who are going to be free agents, a lot of them. Bring in two of those guys if you don't like a quarterback in the draft. If. And let them go. And then take that second pick and go get Dan's defensive tackle for Michigan. Go get a defensive end. Go get a left tackle. Build your team. Build your team. Cool Ray's in Bedford. Cool Ray.
Hey, Cool Ray.
Hey, Happy New Year, man. Fellas.
Happy New Year.
Mr. Felder, I'm completely disagree with you. Like, what you're describing is a rebuild, which means you got to look at totality. You got to look at.
Cool Ray. They were 3-14.
Okay, yeah. But
it is a rebuild. Sorry.
But he's running it. He's running it back. The ownership is running it back with the same guys who went 3-13. So,
and the same guys who went 11-6 last year.
Oh. Okay, but what you're going is 11-6, but when y'all make that argument, y'all completely forget to give credit what credit is due, which is how many games that Myles Garrett and the defense win for us to be 11-6.
Exactly. See, the defense was good.
But the offense was always shady. And my thing was this.
They were 10th in points last year, Cool Ray. It was much better than it is this year.
Yeah, but when you look at, you just said, you know, there's a star guy coming up, a star offensive coordinator. But you got to look at now, once again, let's look at totality, where we just saw Ken Dorsey get thrown up underneath the bus. Like, he was the problem where Ken Dorsey really took over offensive coordinator calls once the season was pretty much lost anyway. So if I don't think no one would take a job where they thinking, like, I'm going to be another scapegoat. I mean, so my thing is this. Unless they actually get someone here who can coach up a quarterback, we're not going to ever solve this problem. Because we have to, don't forget, this team has to sell a great plan moving forward to Myles Garrett. A Hall of Fame, your Hall of Fame left end, you have to sell it or he's going to be gone. And you can't go. Well, we're, so you have
Myles,
to do that.
And Cool Ray, just for the record, Myles said there will be something coming down the road here. When he ended his press conference the other day, and Andrew Berry this morning said, we want Myles Garrett here. We want him to go from Cleveland to Canton.
Well, we know.
Stay tuned on Myles Garrett.
Right. We know the talking point, but Myles Garrett, I told everybody before, Myles Garrett answered that question too fast for him to know what he don't want to do. But he's comfortable here. But these guys want to win championships now. Like, so you can't just decide, well, we're going to do a soft rebuild, but a rebuild, we're going to run it back with the same.
It's basically what he said today. And I got to tell you, his favorite teammates, maybe somewhere down the road, are going to be named Jefferson, Hamilton, Grant, Franklin. All right? Let's be honest.
A lot of Franklins.
Anybody who has a picture on a bill. Those are my favorite teammates, man. They're great. Jeff, I got to be honest with you. Ben Franklin, better teammate than you are. I just want you to know.
You're dang right he is. It's Baskin and Phelps here on The Fan.
They gave you some accountability over the last 2 days, right? Andrew flat out said what you heard there. Kevin Stefanski admitted, you know, hey, we're committed. We're tied to the hip. We're committed to get this done. I still think it left me wanting, but it's so funny that the bar that has been set. Because Eric kind of took what I was going to talk about here, because we're so used to them saying nothing that when they give you just a little bit, you're like, well, accountability, right?
Or when they seem human for the first time in a very long time, right? And he's not just robotic. I mean, listen, we don't listen to Andrew Berry enough in general. So maybe we just need to, I don't know, but it's been 5 years. It's been long enough, even though he only speaks two or three times a year. It's been five years. I thought he did give a lot more than I was expecting today, and I appreciated that. I liked that he came out and said that he was embarrassed. I liked that that it seemed like they have the right idea towards the future as well, but there's only so much you can do in a half-hour press conference.
Yeah, I mean, not being able to offer full details on Deshaun, taking as much ownership as you can on the failure of the Deshaun trade, just in terms of the big picture, like, because it's not just about the season, and I think that's where I think we got close to him saying, you know, two playoff seasons in 5 years isn't enough, but he didn't say it. Like, the reality is, it's this year brings up the need to have accountability, because it's the worst season you've had, and it went so bad. Like, the one thing I can tell you guys is, it's they didn't just fail because of one thing. Yeah, if you want it to be about Deshaun,
Andrew,
that's cute.
Andrew did say that, by the way.
Yes, and which that again,
like, he went into that. It was not just a Deshaun problem. He didn't say Deshaun, but he said quarterback essentially. Yeah. And he went through all the injuries, all the problems in the offensive line, everything that we've talked about for months.
Yes. So and again, he included his front office, the coaching staff, and the players himself, which I agree with. But here's the problem: I think they gave you just enough. Now so I think they took some accountability. So I don't know how to grade that. Like, is it in the end all be all if the real changes, because this is where, all right, what you say or what you do going forward matters. If all this comes down to is you fire two offensive coaches, there are no changes in the front office. And I'm not talking about Andrew. I'm talking about Dee Podesta or maybe a new assistant or maybe a new scouting director brought in, whatever.
Yeah.
If it's just about two coaches getting fired and a new quarterback, that's not really accountability.
Also, two brand new coaches, too.
Yes, yeah.
It's not like these
two guys who are easy to fire because they weren't here for
these aren't
for
guys
the
that have been here for five
job.
Years. These aren't guys that have been through everything.
And in Dorsey's case, as I made it like previously.
Easy come, easy go.
Like, Dorsey was not the most popular hire. There were a lot of questions about why Dorsey was hired in the first place.
Literally nobody, unless you have pudding for brains, is sitting there saying, but Dorsey did this.
Yes.
And you're not doing that.
Yeah. And so I think, like, to me, it's enough of, I think you use the word. This whole thing is a big hope machine, right? Mm-hmm. And so do I appreciate, and I listen.
Which
if
is
I'm
what
gonna
off
be,
seasons are about.
If I'm going to be the guy screaming about accountability, I have to give you at least a modicum, a single kudo to say, I thought this was embarrassing, and I was part of the reason why this season went. But now it becomes, all right, you gave us that dollop. You gave us that dollop of accountability. Now the other part of accountability is, what are the other moves?
Right, and he'll have an offseason to go ahead and show you that. I just, like, he's not going to turn the end-of-season press conference into the roast of Andrew Berry done by Andrew Berry, though.
Yeah, no, but I still think there's ways you can be... Like I think
even the embarrassing part that we brought up, like that. I mean, that's him. He can only give you so much. That's him giving you an inch. That's his, like, all right.
But what do you mean he can only give you so much?
He's not going to just stand up there and just lay waste to every decision that he's ever done and be like, here's where I was wrong here. Here's where I was wrong here. It's not going to see that from him.
Yeah, I think this is where the slippery slope of. We don't say anything, and then we say a little bit benefits them. And again, it's why they do it.
It's a good way to put it. It does. It benefits them because the moment they give you something, then we're like, all right, great.
The reality is, if we say that you've gone three of the last four seasons are losing seasons, this season was 3-14, you made the worst trade in NFL history, and literally the only thing I can say is, well, two coaches that we're going to fire, and hey, we're going to bring in new quarterbacks. That's insulting. And by the way, because again, you can't, like, this season in and of itself is not the only failure they've had. It is the Deshaun trade, and it's three of the last four seasons not being up to snuff and the failure to consistently win. So yeah, I expect to see and hear some changes beyond just, so maybe that's a better way to put it. The accountability going forward can't just be you draft a quarterback and bring in a veteran quarterback and you fired the OC and O-line coach. That this was a disastrous season. You should expect. I mean, like, for instance, Cincinnati 9-8, disastrous season.
They unloaded on a lot of people.
Yeah.
They didn't touch the important people relative to what we consider important.
And in fairness, they shouldn't have fired Lou Anarumo. That was an embarrassing call, but I digress. It's not his fault that they gave him nothing on defense and then the defense gave you nothing, right? But at the same point, like, it's just wild how conservative they are. Yeah, okay, I'll own a little bit. Yeah, it was embarrassing. Is that an undersell in a 3-14 season?
Like, I don't think any answer I'm going to give you is going to make you happy, if I'm just being honest about it, because I think you want more from them, and I just don't think they're ever going to be able to deliver that, because I don't think they're going to walk into the press conference and tell you all the reasons they messed up and then say, here's how we're changing it, because, Nick, I think there's a whole... There's a whole group of the Browns, what do you want to call them? I don't know what it is, that the hierarchy, if you will, that are just basically at this point, they're all fighting for their jobs and they're not going to throw each other under the bus. Like, they've all made a pact here, whether that is Stefanski, whether that is Barry, whether that is Dee Podesta. They've all kind of made this pact where in the public eye, they don't bus toss each other and they don't talk bad about anything that each other has done. And so I think they just turn the page.
216-474-0092. Did you hear enough accountability today? I heard some, but I'll be honest with you. There just might be a part of this that there was nothing they could have said today outside of, I have not been good enough at my job. I can be better. I will be better. And then, like,
even
kowtowed.
That would have been coach speak. Yeah, that would have been the Stefanski famous lines.
And then kowtowed 12 times, each time smacking their head of the concrete just a little bit harder.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Until they got a big bruise on their forehead?
You know, I did. I tried kowtowing once. That bleep hurts.
Yeah, yeah.
That is no joke there. Let's go with Anthony in Elyria. Welcome to the show. Did you hear enough accountability from the Browns today?
Yeah, good afternoon, guys. And yes, I did. And I agree with Peterlin, man. The way you explained that, Peterlin, you explained it perfectly. Andrew Berry did what he's supposed to do as a general manager. He gave enough information to explain it, but he didn't go a full board like, I'm going to give you our whole strategy moving forward. I think he did an excellent job and just enough. Now, here's what I have a problem with, not just reporters and media in general. They always want the general manager or the coach to just give out the whole strategy. That's not their job. And if I was running an organization, I'm not going to tell the general public everything I'm thinking. You tell what you want to tell, and that's it. And now I know the media has a job to do, and they take what the general manager and the coaches say and write stories and do little clips and things. But I think he handled that perfectly. Give out what he wants to give out, and that's it.
Here's what I will say, because I appreciate your opinion, because we asked you a direct question and you gave it back to us. Specific to what does the media want? I mean, I think the media would like something substantial. Thank you for a 3-14 season. Like,
yeah, and I get it.
Like that, you don't have to come out and say we're going to sign Kirk Cousins and draft Shedeur Sanders at 2. Like, and I think this is where I'll be honest with you. I think you're going light on the GM.
Well, here's the reason why I say that, and you're entitled to your opinion. And what I would say to that is this: once again, Peter Lynn made a good point. Haslam and Andrew Berry and Stefanski, they're a team. They don't bash each other in the public. Even if they have any internal shortcomings, they don't talk about it publicly. And I love that approach. And I just think it works. Now they got to turn that into results on the field, of course. And they definitely got to turn into results in the field, but I like the way they handle themselves in their press conferences. That's all I'm saying.
Anthony, appreciate you, sir. If the only bar for this organization is it's not Caligula and everybody turning on each other every 5 seconds, I just, like, I've seen a lot of people, like, a big defense of Stefanski and Berry is, well, I mean, they're the best we've had since 99. Guys, that's no longer, that should no longer be the bar after two playoff trips. The bar now should be, have they consistently got you into the playoffs, and have they consistently put a winning team out there and made winning decisions? And unfortunately, especially this year, they didn't do enough. And so when you say things like, and again, Andrew spoke in generalities, well, we didn't build this roster right. Okay, what was the flaw? Not just in the quarterback room, that's the easy one. Everyone, what was the flaw?
Right, but everything he actually says, you're gonna do the thing that we're supposed to do in this job, and we're gonna hold him accountable to anything he actually says. That's like when he says that Stefanski was the one that made the call on Ken Dorsey. Now for the next 5 years, when we talk about Ken Dorsey and who made that call, we're gonna hold Stefanski accountable for making that decision. It's much easier for him, if everyone's keeping score out here and keeping tally, it's much easier for him to go ahead and not say that, and to basically protect the guys that so far publicly Stefanski's protected him.
Jim in Strongsville, welcome to the show, buddy. What you got for us?
Look, guys, I mean, we're blaming the wrong people here. But next year is going to be a dark year. It's just going to be dark. I hate to paint that picture, dark year. It comes down to this. You're putting – look, Andrew Berry's just happy he still got a job. Let's honestly face it. He hasn't been successful. Hasn't done a great job. Look, if you were paying somebody just to do the salary cap, sure, great job. Do you know what? The GM's got to acquire talent. He's got to draft the right players. He hasn't done it. He's been an abject failure at that. And so to look at it, what do you want to expect the guy to do? Just sit there and criticize himself? That's why next year's a dark year. We're expecting these people who haven't gotten it done in 5 years to get it done in year number 6. I mean, what kind of crazy logic is that? What do we want him to say? What are we going to do? That's why when he stands up there and says, well, we didn't build – yeah, you didn't build the roster right. Where are you being held accountable? Most people don't get multiple chances to rebuild a roster when they haven't won anything. I just don't understand. This goes back to Jimmy Haslam. He's putting these guys back out here. Here's what's going to end up happening, I guarantee you. Next year, we're going to get to week 6. They're going to stink. And guess what? They're going to start firing everybody. And we're all going to say, well, if you felt that whatever about him, why didn't you fire him at the end of the year? That's where we're going to be.
Jim, we appreciate you. Your response to Jim, because I don't know who he agrees with or disagrees with.
Well, okay, how I took it was him saying what I believed, which is I don't think Andrew Berry is going to stand up there and talk about his shortcomings all day.
Oh, that's interesting. I think you just heard a lot of people agree with you. I think that's all.
Well, that's
I think
always
you heard
nice.
The first two callers be like, always, JP's always, on to something.
That's always nice. No, it wasn't. Then, it wasn't that. I mean, Anthony said it twice, which I don't know. Once you say it twice, I'm like, I don't even know if I agree with me at this point. You agree with me too much over here. That's never a good thing.
No, I actually think this is now like an Andrew Berry press conference. You're trying to throw me off the scent because I know how much you like being complimented.
No, not at all. It's never a bad thing, though. Who doesn't like a compliment?
I'm Jeff Phelps. That's Andy Baskin. Mr. Action.
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 Why don't news channels do that anymore? Action news. Eyewitness news.
Are you kidding? They do.
They do?
Yeah. Let's open every newscast with the red breaking news banner.
Oh, good point.
Because there's breaking news every night at 11 o'clock.
Isn't it crazy? It happens at 11 o'clock.
Every night.
Yeah, it's just every night. Like, it's weird. It doesn't happen at like 10:50.
So we started this.
They would
new,
break in.
Yeah, we started this new thing this week with the idea of just straight information, of keeping everybody kind of in tune with where this thing might go. We know the Browns need a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably need two quarterbacks.
Or three.
And we've looked so far, and we're just going to profile one guy most every day,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the offseason here, because there are a lot of guys. And we've looked at a guy coming out in the draft, Cam Ward from Miami. He was the first guy we looked at. Yesterday, we talked about Daniel Jones.
Right.
And who was a really high draft choice. Today, we're talking about another guy who was a really high draft choice, and I think, I don't know, he intrigues the heck out of me.
Baskin and Phelps present.
All right, so tell me again how this is not the same old Browns.
Let's find us a quarterback.
And again, we're not advocating for any of these guys right now. This is all just information. But I do like this guy. And Dan hates his guts. Dan thinks he's a despicable human being.
Oh, no, just
and can't play football.
Of all the clunkers, this one might clunk the loudest.
I think this is a guy who hasn't had the opportunity to really do what it is he might be able to do. And the key word is might. And that is 24-year-old, third overall pick in the 2021 draft by the San Francisco 49ers, Trey Lance. Out of North Dakota State.
Who's never lost a fumble in the NFL.
Well, there you go. You got that going for you. So
I'm just looking for one good stat.
Here's Trey's deal. And everybody assumes he can't play. That might be the case. Okay?
Oh,
that,
I can't wait to hear the rest of this
that
one.
That might be the case.
Sell, baby, sell.
You go.
I will make the argument that
you can win something on this shelf between this corner and in this spot.
I will make the argument that this guy has
win some crap.
Since coming out of the out of college and being the third pick in the draft, has been in the wrong place at the wrong time his entire pro career.
Mm.
Dan, don't laugh. You never know, okay? You never know. Third pick in 2021 by the 49ers. And remember, they traded up. And stop me if this sounds familiar. The Niners, they swapped picks with the Dolphins in 2021 and then gave up an additional two first-round picks and a third to move up to get Trey Lance with the third pick in the draft. So they ended up giving a bunch of draft capital. He came in as a rookie out of North Dakota State. Okay, at North Dakota State, he didn't play much.
You are just selling me left and right.
Well,
keep going.
No, but here's the reason he didn't play much.
Mm.
His first year, he was redshirted.
Mm-hmm.
So he played in two games. He threw one pass.
Oh, that's okay? Big numbers there. Quarterback rating of 200.
It was, actually.
Yeah.
And he completed that pass.
Did the math in my
head. Then he started in 2019 and was really good. Threw for about 2,800 yards, 28 touchdowns. No interceptions at North Dakota State.
And they were undefeated.
And he rushed for over 1,100 yards.
Yeah.
So he was really good. Yeah, they went 16-0. And then the next year was the COVID year. And the season got shut down after he played one game.
Yeah.
And remember, some schools kicked the season into 2021 and they were going to play spring football?
Yeah.
He decided he's going to come out for the draft. And so he did. And you can't say that was a bad decision because he went number three. He got paid, right?
Yeah, he did.
So he goes into San Francisco. Smart move. He was a young guy. He was only 21 years old when he came out.
Mm-hmm.
And so they did what they should do. He was the backup to Jimmy Garoppolo.
Right.
Which is not a bad way to go, I think. But he ended up starting a couple of games. Then his second year, he's the starting quarterback in San Francisco. And people forget this aspect of it. He was the starting quarterback for the 49ers ahead of a couple of other guys, okay, Jimmy G and Brock Purdy. He beat those guys out. He's the starting quarterback. But, of course, he was the third overall pick, so they're going to start him when he's ready to go, they think. He broke his ankle in the second game of the season. People forget that.
It's a bad break.
He broke his ankle in the second game of the season and was done for the year. What happened? Jimmy G took over.
Yeah.
Jimmy G got hurt. Then they have to throw Purdy out there. Purdy goes 5-0 and gets them to the NFC Championship game where they lost to the Eagles. But Brock Purdy, last pick in the draft, steps in, plays lights out, and Trey Lance only had started two games and got hurt early on in the second game, so he basically played one game. And then they go back to training camp the next year. They had already brought in Sam Darnold, and Purdy wins the job. Sam Darnold's the backup, and the 49ers say adios. They've had enough of Trey Lance. So he was the starting quarterback there until he broke his ankle. Would he have latched onto the job and become their Brock Purdy? You'll never know. And then the next year he came back from the ankle, and both Purdy and Darnold, that's the direction they wanted to go in, and they bailed on Trey Lance. So then Dallas gives up a fourth-round pick for him. Well, they have Dak Prescott, and they have Cooper Rush, who they liked as a backup.
Mm-hmm.
Trey Lance didn't play at all in 2023. This year, Dak gets hurt. Instead of finding out what they have in Trey Lance, they play Cooper Rush, who was miserable in the first game and then played really well. Cooper Rush did a nice job. They finally started Trey Lance, finally played for the Cowboys in a start the last game of the season. Commanders, he was 20 of 34 for 244 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. So you could make the argument that this guy, 6'4", 226 pounds, really athletic, throws it pretty well, only 24, turns 25 next May, has been in the wrong spot a couple of times. Now, could he have beaten out Brock Purdy? Yeah, except Purdy went 5-0 the year before and took him to the NFC Championship game. That's pretty serious stuff.
Yeah, you can't really mess with that.
You know, you really can't.
Mm-mm.
And then they brought in Darnold.
You look like an idiot.
Could he have backed up Purdy and ahead of Darnold? Yeah, except they signed Darnold as a free agent. I think they paid him like $8 million.
Mm-hmm.
So my only thought on Lance is this. The Niners, who Dan thinks, you know, walk on water, thought enough of the guy to at one time trade to swap one first-round pick and then give up two others and a third to bring him in.
Mm-hmm.
And then, broken ankle, bad circumstances. And then Dallas had Dak. They thought they'd take a chance on a fourth rounder. Jerry Jones was ridiculed for it. I would have done the same thing if I was him.
Yeah.
What I would have done was play him this year. That's where I think Dallas screwed up. Dallas was out, and they're playing Cooper Rush.
I don't know, Jeff. Your boy Mark McCarthy knows what he's doing down there.
Well, it might not have been his call. You never know.
Mark or
but
Mike?
My only thought is this. If I'm looking for a young veteran who hasn't really had the opportunity, and there are a bunch of those guys out there. We've talked about them. Trey Lance would probably be at the top of my list. And if I'm a team like the Browns who need a quarterback, I would love to bring this guy in along with, say, if I don't deem anybody viable to draft at number two, I would love to bring this guy in with Kirk Cousins and see what happens. Because there might be some untapped potential there that you could end up with a quarterback for the next decade.
All right. So now that I've listened to your entire argument.
And again, I'm just giving information about these guys. Do I
think this an argument or is this information?
Slant.
Do I think he's
going to be a stud quarterback in the NFL? I don't know.
If we're looking at the bias chart, it's one direction.
I do like this guy because I think he's been given the shaft by the NFL, and nobody did it on purpose necessarily. The guy broke his ankle. Well, Purdy comes in and he plays lights out. Okay, well, what are you going to do? Of course, you're going to start Purdy.
I don't know. The Eagles didn't start Nick Foles after they won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, well, that's.
Nick, that's right. That's correct. Yeah, that's a good
point. Nick was a guy who had kicked around the league a little bit, and they knew what they had. They thought.
They didn't go to the Super Bowl, right?
And won the Super Bowl. And still
no, I get that. But the point of it is, somebody who you respect like crazy thought enough of this guy to trade up to number three. They also thought enough of him to bail on him for a fourth. But they were covered there because they had two guys. Turns out they were right about Sam Darnold. Sam can play.
All right, so I've listened to your argument, Jeff, and
I think he's a really interesting guy, and some team's going to sign him and give him a chance to compete to be the starter. I wouldn't mind it being the Browns.
Yeah, it just doesn't do anything for me. I mean, you, everything you laid out is like, okay, got hurt.
You know, you're going to need a quarterback, right?
Yeah, I just think you can do better.
You're going to have to pick somebody.
I think you can do better.
You might be able to do better. I hope so.
I'd rather draft a young quarterback in a later round.
Well, this guy is a young quarterback. He's only started four games.
That just still feels – well, starts don't make – I mean, he still has 4 years in the league, even though he didn't play for
long. He's only made four starts.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm just not into it. I can't. I'm not swallowing this.
But you understand why he only made four starts.
Yeah,
He busted up his ankle, was out for the season, and then got traded to a team that has the highest paid quarterback in the league.
Yeah, I just kind of feel like you're selling me a car that was all rusted out, and you put a ton of Bondo on it, you painted it up, and now all of a sudden I'm like,
no, I got rid of that car.
I'm like, that car looks okay. It doesn't look so bad, and I don't really want to spend that much money. And then all of a sudden, you know, first rain, the paint comes off the outside, and I'm like, Phelps tried to do it again.
Except it's like the newer version of it. Like, it's some car that somebody put out, and you're like, oh, this is a disaster zone. We can't keep selling this.
Yeah, and then we knew better, because we knew that you were driving that other minivan for millions of miles.
Kevin's at Fairview Park. Hi, Kevin.
What's up, Kev? Tell him that he's crazy, will you please?
Well, I'm not crazy. I'm just giving you information about a guy.
Nah, in the end,
that's what this whole thing is to give you information.
Come on, man. You try to sell it.
Do I think he's the answer? I don't know, but I wouldn't mind having him.
Man.
I wouldn't mind having him here.
Do we need to check my insurance policies after this?
Kevin, go ahead.
I got a different direction for you.
Go ahead,
so,
Kevin.
So, free agency and blah, blah, blah. Why does Cleveland sports teams always take players that played well against us, and they suck after we get them? I don't have names to go by.
I don't know. I thought Kevin Love was pretty good. I don't know. That's one. Okay.
There's a lot of players in the past that played well against us, and then we take them in free agency, and they turn out to be. Sorry about that.
Yep. So are we, because we're dumping you.
Oh man, it was so close, to a phone call, yet so far away.
Yep. Absolutely the case.
I don't know. I think that just kind of stands out, though, the whole premise of trying to pick up free agents that had good games against Cleveland, no matter what. But you can't lump all three sports teams together. That's just not right.
Well, just keep in mind, you guys are going to poo-poo all of these guys because you're not going to like any of these quarterbacks. This is what's available to the Browns right
now. You're going to get to some that I'm okay with. It's just, if you told me Trey Lance is coming here as a backup quarterback, possibly third string dice roll, sold. If you're going to tell me he's a starter, we're going to have a problem.
I didn't tell you that, did I? So we shouldn't have a problem, should we?
Oh, I always have a problem.
Do we have a problem
when it
here?
Comes to you rolling these...
Askin, Baskin, Phelps Helps coming up next.
And Daryl Ryder joins us right now. Brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Daryl, good morning to you.
Good morning, guys.
Is Darius Garland your second most trusted Cleveland Cavalier?
Second most trusted? Sure.
Is he the second most important now?
I might argue that would be Evan Mobley.
Ooh. Oh.
But it's a tight race. You're asking me to choose my second favorite child, I guess, because they're both equally important in my view.
Okay. Tone?
Boy, it is a tough one, and Darius is by far playing the best basketball of his career.
Yeah.
What's crazy is... And I'm going to use the term expense probably incorrectly. It's kind of all coming at the expense of Donovan Mitchell's numbers, and no one cares. It's the first superstar that is as good as Donovan Mitchell to never care about his numbers like this. It's incredible.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a true team. And that's not just on the floor, but it's also behind the scenes. I mean, the last couple of nights, it's been the Darius Garland All-Star campaign. Mixed in with the other three guys as well. But, you know, this is a complete basketball team, or as close to a complete basketball team that we had. And I know that sounds crazy considering the 2016 Cavaliers won it all. But the drama that surrounded those 4 years in LeBron 2.0, none of that exists with this team. There is no drama behind the scenes. There is no subtweeting, you know, telling people that they need to either fit in or fit out and things like that. They really are a cohesive unit. certainly Kenny Atkinson deserves a lot of credit for that. But they're also a very versatile team. And last night was not one of their better nights at the office. Kenny Atkinson mentioned before the game he feared it was going to be one of those nights. It ultimately ended up being one of those nights, yet they still won the game. Granted, it helped that you were playing an 8-win Toronto Raptors team, but you know, these last two wins that the Cavaliers have had last year, I think, are games they lose. And they're winning these games now. The record speaks for itself, but man, what a special group they seem to be.
Daryl Ryder with us. I have another question on that, because now the record is so impossible to ignore. The fact that you could get to 33-4.
Right.
Just, he says it's coming out of my mouth. It seems silly. It seems ridiculous.
It seems absurd, right?
It does. So because of that, you know, Boston is still the favored team in the NBA to win it all. And then Oklahoma City is next.
Right.
So I've been asking NBA people, is there any record? Is there any record that would have people changing their minds, that would have Vegas changing their minds? And it seems like no. It seems like no. We're going to go in. If Boston is healthy, they're going to be favored. What kind of pressure comes with the Cavs if they have a record-setting regular season? If they were to win 74 games,
yeah,
something stupid like that. Because they really haven't had any pressure. It's been, hey, we're going to run it back. You got a new coach, and everybody's playing unbelievably well. Is there any pressure that comes along with chasing history?
Oh, absolutely. But not so much regular season. It's the playoffs. And that's what they keep talking about, is they know their reputation. Jared Allen talked about this the other night, that, hey, you know, the wins are great, stacking them up the way they are, but they've not done anything yet. They know their reputation is they go soft in the playoffs. And they are looking to flip that on its head. So, you know, I asked Darius Garland last night, you know, hey, how do you think you're handling being the most hunted team in the league right now? They could have made Toronto's season last night had the Raptors been able to hang on to a couple of double-digit leads. And he said, well, look at the record. I think we're handling it pretty well. But I do feel like, regardless of any historical achievements or challenges they may make with their record, and the question I'm asking is, can they lose fewer games this season than the Browns did, which I think is entirely possible, is the fact that they know they need to get it done in the playoffs. That's where their focus is, and they're using this regular season as a tune-up. But what fascinates me most is that they're winning while using the regular season as their tune-up.
We got Daryl Ryder joining us here on the show. So is this, do you get finals tickets now? Because I made a joke yesterday, like, well, you know, Holmgren doesn't want you to get playoff tickets, but right, you can call the Cavs for finals tickets.
Yeah.
And yesterday during a segment, do you you want to do that?
I'm not making any vacation plans for early to middle June.
Okay. I love it. Daryl Ryder, brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers. All right, over to the Browns.
Do we have to?
Yeah, of course. Hell yeah, we have to. After last night's game.
Things were going so well, Ken.
I felt bad for Drew Aller yesterday.
Yeah.
Bad day, but said earlier
he's had a few of those.
Said earlier this week he should go back to college. Now he'd be nuts to come out now.
Yeah.
Is it Abdul Carter no matter what?
I don't know if it's Abdul Carter no matter what. I'll say this about Drew Aller. Welcome to reality, the rest of the world. I wasn't really understanding this drumbeat that was building, that he was going to come out and he needed to come out and he would be the best option for the Browns in the draft.
I can see that reasoning. You didn't see that reason?
No, because I watched him. I've watched him play.
Yeah, but
he's not ready.
I don't think he's ready either. But if he would have continued to play well, like he did play well in the last two playoff games, now that was against inferior competition, inferior defenses. But if he were to continue to play well, it's like, hey, 6'5", quarterback, all the other things, has a lot of experience, plays right into a Kevin Stefanski type of system as best a young quarterback can anymore.
Yeah,
I mean, we can discuss those sort of things, that maybe the time has passed by that offense. But it would make a lot of sense for a lot of people. It didn't make much sense to me. I didn't think he was ready. And plus, I don't know if he – I think the only quarterback that I really trust to handle the pressure – now, I'm not talking about on the field. I mean everything that comes with it. The only one I actually would trust that could handle the pressure would be Shedeur Sanders.
Yeah, because of his dad and the three-ring circus that entails.
Because remember this. Remember, like, part of the reason it didn't work out with Baker is Baker was given everything. Like, he's the franchise quarterback, so let him help us make decisions that are big-time decisions in helping to raise him
including as a head franchise quarterback.
Exactly.
Yeah. Here's my thing with Alex. I've watched some of his games this year, and he's not polished enough yet. I see the talent. He certainly has the physical traits, you know, being 6'5", right? He's just not ready yet, and it's okay to say that. I know he's a local boy. I remember watching him in high school, and he was spectacular to watch, but he's not ready yet. And also, too, hopefully he gets a coach that gets a clue and can help him more than I think James Franklin is helping him. Because on the big stage, he has not performed well. And so another year at Penn State, I think, will help him tremendously. And, you know, if the Browns are back in the top five next year, I'm more than willing to entertain the conversation, but not right now. Because he's not ready. And I don't think that the Browns are in a position where they can afford, assuming he would come out, to gamble on him and think that they're going to develop him. Because the next quarterback that the Cleveland Browns actually develop will be the first. So, yeah, I think he should go back to school.
All right, so where are you leaning today at number two? With the obvious understanding you have plenty of time to change your opinion when new information comes in. A lot of people fell in love last night with Abdul Carter. What say you?
I'm still unmoved from my trade the pick mantra. Not out of the top 10. That's the caveat. Because I think once you go out of top 10, like they have done with previous regimes, that you lose the tiers, if you will, of available prospects. I still want them to trade down a couple of spots, collect another first-round pick next year, then go best player that's available on the board, whether that's an offensive lineman, whether that's a defensive tackle or a defensive end. I like the idea, and it's certainly intriguing, you know, watching Carter a little bit this season, pairing him with Myles Garrett, right? That's something that, you know, we've been talking about over the last couple of years, finding the complementary piece. We saw it with Jadeveon Clowney. It worked 1 year, didn't work the second year. Za'Darius Smith, right? It seemed to work 1 year, and then they had to move on because the season fell apart. And, you know, so they sent him up to Detroit to give him an opportunity to play for a contender. But so it intrigues me, Anthony. But right now, I still would like them to trade out of two and collect some extra draft assets for 2026 to put them in a position to where if there is that quarterback coming out in 26, they've got the ammunition to go get that quarterback.
Daryl, it's going to put them in a weird spot because I think that they're going to be desperate now.
Yeah, and guess what happens when you're desperate, right? Yeah. Deshaun Watson happens when you're desperate, and that's what worries me right now is the Browns have the same – I don't want to use the term desperation. I know what you're saying, Ken.
Yeah, of course.
I'm not disagreeing with you. But they're in the same spot they've been for the last 26 years. And that is looking for an answer and a solution at the most important position. And there's no question that that position held them back this past season. But that's not the only thing that held them back this offseason. Are they a franchise quarterback away? For me, they're a franchise quarterback away and then a little extra on top of it. There are things that need to be shored up with this roster this offseason. But I worry, to your point, that, right, they got a reprieve. Ownership gave Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski a mulligan for this 3-14 disaster that we had all had to watch. But now, what are you going to do to fix it? And that's where I get really concerned, one, with Andrew Berry's eye for talent, two, his willingness to accept red flags, and three, as you put it, the desperation factor. And when you're desperate, you make dumb decisions. Deshaun Watson was a dumb, emotional decision that has cost this franchise immensely. I was against the trade when it happened, and I'm against the trade looking at the results. And that's obviously not a revelation there, but I worry. You know, they're very thoughtful people out there, and the one time that they weren't thoughtful, they made a colossal error. And I hope they don't repeat that this year just because they see what we all see.
Are you scouting Pittsburgh tomorrow night in terms of the quarterbacks, Russ Wilson or Justin Fields?
For me, there's not, the scouting's done. I mean, it's not just about one game. I'm going to watch because I'm going to, and this really pains me to say it, but sometimes you got to take one for the team here. I'm going to enjoy watching the Steelers get pummeled in the playoffs again. And then I'm going to watch the reaction from Pittsburgh of everybody wanting Mike Tomlin's head. And the reality is, yes, they're stuck in football purgatory here. They're good enough to make the playoffs, but they're not good enough to do anything else. And that's kind of where they've been for the last, I don't know, decade or so. And it's a credit to Mike Tomlin that he has taken so many deficient teams to the playoffs, but also at the same time, they've not been bad enough to get a draft pick to really, you know, help them get over the top, if you will. So I'm going to enjoy the let's fire Mike Tomlin talk when people don't realize he's really overachieving with some, well, underwhelming rosters.
Is one last thing, Daryl, for me. Is it bad? Is it really bad as a host in Cleveland that I told Ken yesterday I am in the anybody but Kansas City camp when it comes to the Super Bowl?
That includes Baltimore.
Which means if Baltimore wins the Super Bowl,
you'll take it?
I'd be rooting. I mean, you know, obviously I'd root against Baltimore in the Super Bowl, but I am rooting for Baltimore to beat Kansas City.
You realize we're on that 12-year cycle, right?
Where they're supposed to win with a quarterback wearing a certain number or a certain age.
Well, and it's 12 years since the last. Yeah, it's just they're on that.
Pretty incredible.
I know. You know what? I'm not going to. I'm indifferent on who wins this year. I respect and appreciate greatness. I respect and appreciate teams that can make history. We were talking about the Cavaliers earlier. So I'm not going to care if the Chiefs win a third straight Super Bowl and become the first team ever to three-peat. I think it'll be great for the game. I'm anticipating that the divisional round is going to be a bloodbath in the AFC with the Bills, the Ravens, and the Chiefs trying to sort things out. And I anticipate that the AFC Championship game is going to be compelling television as well. So. But I'm not going to judge you on your take, but I'm indifferent as to who ultimately wins the whole thing.
Daryl Ryder, brought to you by Schaub & Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Daryl, thank you very much for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
You bet, guys. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the football.
You as well.